and welcome to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we want to thank the folks in Victoria, Vancouver, and the Okanagan who are tuning in today. And we're very excited to be on CFUZ, or CFUZ, in Penticton. Mm-hmm. Brand new station we're in. We're also in Guelph, which is very exciting.
We're finally in Ontario.
We are in, well, I think we're in Kingston as well.
Oh, and, that's right, yeah.
We can't ignore our listeners there in Kingston. That would just be the most inappropriate. But we want to welcome all of our listeners and thank you all for joining us. Now, speaking of out in BC, though, this past weekend was Vancouver Pride. Now, coming up, we do have Montreal Pride, which I'll actually be going to. So you can, if you are a listener in Montreal, reach out to us and you can have a conversation with Cangria.
Are we on a Montreal station? Or would it be an internet listener?
It would be an online listener. Yeah, I don't think we broadcast in Montreal. But anyway.
Goals.
Yeah, hashtag life goals. But yes, if you are in Montreal, let us know, and we would love to chat with you. You can catch me at CKUT FM on Friday if you wanted to come and speak with me in person. I'll be at the station there. So, Vancouver.
Yes.
And Vancouver Pride.
Mm-hmm.
It was notable for its success, but also notable for some things that were missing. So what was missing at Vancouver Pride, Sebastian?
Waldo.
Waldo was missing at Vancouver, although Cameron San Diego did make the visit, so that is fair.
Apparently Waldo was there somewhere, it's just people had troubles finding him.
Yeah, he's quite elusive. That aside, who was really missing from Vancouver Pride?
You're trying to get me to say the Prime Minister.
Yes, of course. Yeah, and so Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was notably absent at Vancouver Pride.
He was scheduled to be there, but the thing is that if the Prime Minister is scheduled to be somewhere, that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be there. So one of the questions that I had been asked is, you know, does anybody know if there's any intents for Trudeau to be at Pride? And it's, well, no, people ask me, is Trudeau going to be at Pride? And the answer is you're going to have to ask Trudeau, because he never books anything until 2 weeks in advance. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I came up with this example, but I thought it was a valid example. Let's say he is going to, let's say, Canada Pride in Montreal. And then the night before the parade, the euro tanks. It just slashes by 50% in value. He's going to have his hands full. He's going to have stuff to do. And so when Trudeau says he's going to be at a parade, that is pending nothing more critical happening. And something did happen. He was also in BC because he was attending, and I don't remember the exact name of it, but I had read a couple hours ago, I think, now. Anyway, there was a summit on Indigenous rights or Indigenous issues on Vancouver Island, and it ran over a little bit. And I think that that's okay. If he were at a summit to help improve the lives of Indigenous people in Vancouver, not in Vancouver, in all of BC, really, and the meeting went a little bit long, I think that's a valid reason to miss a parade.
Yeah, and meetings get long in the tooth. That happens. And to be honest, LGBT folks, although I'm sure we're disappointed that the Prime Minister wasn't there. You know, you don't go to a Pride parade to see the Prime Minister. You go to the Pride parade to celebrate yourselves, to show allyship to folks who are there. You know, you go because you want to show that you believe in the cause. You want to, you know, you don't go to see Canada's number one celebrity outside of Justin Bieber. You know, the other
and
Justin,
Celine Dion,
and Celine Dion, obviously, and Bryan Adams. Okay, well, clearly one of Canada's limited celebrities. But
yeah, Leonard Cohen has passed away. So,
I know.
Yeah, so
I know.
Trudeau moved up the ladder.
He did move up the ladder. Yeah, only just though. But yeah,
well, it's not the only reason, though. I mean, they say that there's three main reasons that Pride exists. And this actually does tie into some of the conversations we're going to have over the hour. So they say one of them is political, that it all started with politics and having to do with human rights and equality. The second thing is community. So anybody who forgets, who thinks that Pride is exclusively a political affair, they've clearly never been to a small town Pride. So small town Pride is almost entirely, depending on the size of the community, it's almost entirely about community. It's the family picnic.
Yeah, and we've talked about that in past episodes. I don't want to rehash in too much detail.
And then the third one is education. is usually the third big pillar of pride. That, you know, you go to a parade and there's somebody marching and they have signs that indicate some cause or goal or something that you may not realize is something that someone in the community cares about. So the parade is also a way of sort of advertising what people care about.
So, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think, you're spot on. The parade represents these three different fundamental pillars in the pride community. And, I just don't think Justin Trudeau is, like, the fourth pillar. So, I mean, I think that's that's fine.
No. It is good to see that, you know, the government cares about your population.
Randy Bourcineau, the MP from Edmonton, who is the LGBT special advisor or whatever his role is, to the Prime Minister. He was there.
Yeah.
And, he's very handsome and charming.
I haven't actually gotten to meet him. You have.
I have.
Yeah. We had a scheduled appointment to meet him back in the winter.
We did. Actually, we've been trying to reach out to him again. So if you are listening, Monsieur Randy Bourcineau, we are available for an interview and would love to chat with you. That aside, some people who were not there, who's been the staple of the parade for about 10 years, there's great coverage in Daily Extra, which was, of course, has a great center in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. They reported that Rainbow Refuge isn't there.
Yeah.
Rainbow Refuge announced in the post that they shared, I believe, on their Facebook, that they are not going to attend. And they did say that it has been incredibly empowering for folks. So Rainbow Refuge brings over refugees and asylum seekers from countries where it is legal to be gay or
right,
be gay.
Yeah.
And Canada offers refugees. We did a great episode under the title Velvet Studio. So if you go to our website, www.canqueer.news, and then click in the top right hand corner is the Velvet Studio link.
I think that was 9 months ago?
If not more, it's been
something
a while.
Something like that, yeah. We interviewed...
we interviewed somebody from the UNHCR. So
yeah.
The UN Human...
It was September last year was Refugee Month.
Yeah.
So it would have been September last year that we did that, yeah.
But if you go to velvetstudio.ca is the actual quicker way to get there. And I think the banner is still up for Refugee Month. Check it out right on the front page. Really easy to see. And we did a great interview there with somebody from the UNHCR. And he was talking about the fact that Canada is amongst the best in terms of settling refugees.
Yeah.
So these guys privately sponsor folks to come over. And they said, you know, the Canadian police are like night and day to what a lot of these folks have experienced.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly comforting to see the police protecting the parade.
Yeah.
And kind of empowering the folks within it as opposed to beating them with a truncheon.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's fine. But what they're critical of, and we have a quote here, that police forces across Canada have not adequately addressed systemic racism, discrimination, and abuse. And I think that is an absolutely fair critique. And I say that because Vancouver Police itself, about 2 years ago, was called out for not having trans equality policies. There was, the roughing up of a trans person. The Police Services Board was told to have these policies in place, and only just this past week have they even introduced them. So Vancouver Police now has something in place, which is great, but I mean, it's still, they have a long way to go.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, on the one hand, introducing new policy, even if it's cookie cutter policy that you're just copying from someone else who's already doing it well, these things take time. It takes time to write the policy, integrate the policy, make sure that the policy doesn't contradict any other
policy.
But
it should not take 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years is a bit long.
Yeah, that's...
I think 6 to 8 months for an organization like the police to introduce a new policy, I think that's a realistic timeline, but not 2 years. That's stretching it a little bit.
Yeah, that's taking the mic. So they decided to not march in this year's Pride. And we have some reports that folks at the parade, not many folks, but some folks at the parade actually turned their back on police.
As they walked by, yeah.
Because in Vancouver, they were actually invited to participate in uniform. Well, they weren't barred from participating in uniform. It's an interesting approach. I have sources which tell me that there is potential that, you know, they may be trying attempts to glitter bomb the police contingent in the Ottawa Pride Parade. A glitter bomb is essentially when you just throw glitter at somebody.
Yeah.
Which I think is incredibly environmentally irresponsible. Like, also a crime. So, I mean, just don't do
that. Depending on how you do it, it could be interpreted as assault. And
yeah.
The police are very well trained on how to interpret scenarios as to whether or not they fit into a crime or not.
Yep.
So if you do intend on doing it, be sure that it's a loose amount in your hand and not an object that explodes on impact. Like, even if it's like...
Or just don't. That's a safer option. Yeah. You know, demonstrate like the folks in Vancouver did. You know, you don't want them there, so you turn your back. I think that is a very symbolic gesture of you know, I don't want to see this kind of... yeah, I think it's very powerful. But yeah, Rainbow Refuge was not in attendance, and neither was Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of
Canada. It's peculiar that a lot of the people who insist on the police not being in their parade also feel that it's overdue that the Prime Minister should be marching in parades. And there's another group of people who are pointing out that that first group of people have their priorities weird, because if the Prime Minister is marching in the parade, there will be a sniper on every rooftop, as well as a sea of men in generic suits standing around him who, you know, are covered in hidden weapons.
Men in generic suits.
Well, you know.
That's how they describe the RCMP's close protection unit, men in generic suits.
Well, you know, the men in black. It's just, you know, men in generic suits. And some women, actually. But, I mean, it also highlights the point of, you know, why the police aren't there. And it's, you know, for some people, it's about the uniform. For some people, the uniform is the symbol. And for other people, because in most cities, not all cities, but most cities, the police's uniform underneath the utility belt and the gun and the vest and all the accoutrements, their uniforms are usually identical to fire, paramedic, and bylaw, except for the patch on their shoulder. It's, they usually get the pants and the shirt from the same company, all of them.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to, you know, just sort of be this visual narrative that it's all extensions of the city, da 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 da. But for some people, it is about the uniform, and for some people, it is about having a gun in a space that is supposed to be safe. But with the uniform, I mean, it is a complicated issue, because I've spoken to people who have come to Canada from places where they cannot legally be, and they're totally stoked to see uniformed officers in the parade, that that here it's a symbol that here they can turn their back on a cop and know that they're going to be safe, that, you know, the police are not going to track them down. Now, that said, I think what the Refuge did was completely right. It makes sense, because they're not there to support what could be. They're there to support the least of them. So if one of them feels uncomfortable around military or police uniforms, then that's sufficient.
Yeah.
Because they're there to support the most vulnerable of the lot, not the ones who have the most happy story.
Exactly.
And there are happy stories out there of people who've come to Canada from, like, you know, Indonesia or Iraq or Russia, and they get here and they see a uniform with, like, a police in uniform with, like, a rainbow lei because they're at Pride, and they're just...
Or rainbow epaulettes, which are becoming more common. Yeah.
And they're just... It's therapeutic to them, and all of a sudden, like, the weight comes off their shoulders, but that's not a universal story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great story to hear, but I think it's a matter of you know, playing to the most vulnerable among you and protecting them and letting the happy stories be happy stories. And I think we need a space for both to be able to say there are some people that benefit from seeing this. But what we need to do is we need to give them a space where they can see this, where other people who don't feel comfortable with it don't have to see. I don't know. It's basically what I'm saying is the only answer to this whole thing is that it's complicated. I think any discussion that begins with anything other than, well, it's complicated, but... I think you're doing the situation a disservice.
Well, I want to...
you want to move on, don't you?
Yeah, I do want to move on, but I want to stay in BC for the moment.
You want to stay in BC? Are we going to be talking about a pole vaulter?
No, but he is so handsome.
Well, he's got beautiful buns and thighs.
He does.
And, you know...
I mean, you should at least tell us his name.
Well, the gay men of the world have a tendency to be all about, you know, beefy chests, for example, and muscly arms. But
you know, you say that.
I'm a legs man, for sure.
But people are like, well, they're essentially lusting after Olympians. So Tom Daley is a perfect example of that.
But Tom Daley is a diver. He's balanced. Nobody lusts over the speed skaters who, where each of their thighs is bigger than whole your torso, and then they have spindly little noodle arms.
I mean, Tom Daley definitely has a swimmer's body, but now apparently there's a new out gay swimmer at the Olympic level who a diver. And that's giving Tom Daley a run for his money.
Well, in terms of media coverage.
Yeah. So who is this Canadian?
You're asking me to remember the name.
You can't just drop a story like that and,
I'm just going to do what the listeners at home could do. I'm using Google gay pole vaulter, except I accidentally said gay poem vaulter.
Well, I mean, say Sir John now.
Sean Barber. There you go. There you go. There you go.
Sean Barber.
But, I mean, it's also kind of indicative. I think we've talked about this on past sports episodes. It was 2 years ago when we had members of the Ottawa Wolves. Mm-hmm. That's a local rugby team on. And then I think it was a year ago we had some track and field runners who are openly gay on the show. And something that a lot of them talk about is that other than little pockets, like rugby is a weirdly gay-friendly sport, and it has been for over a decade. Roller derbies are a weirdly lesbian-friendly sport, and they have been for quite some time.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, out gay athletes, they're in athletics, not in team sports. So pole vaulting, absolutely, track and field, triathlon, swimming, individual sports are more likely to come out. So, I mean, I would like to see an openly gay hockey player.
I think Mark Tewksbury really kind of helped. And in fact,
he helped with individual athletes, not with team sports. Like, because there's what was his name? The Welsh guy who made rugby gay. Oh, he came out, and then in the next 2 years, like another 10 guys came out, and people were like, "Well, I guess rugby's gay now."
I was going to mention this at the end, but now that you've brought it up in conversation,
yes,
the BBC One Radio did a really interesting documentary. I only managed to catch the first 5-10 minutes of it. It's on my list to finish. But they essentially investigate the basic question of,
yes,
there are 2,000 professional soccer players in the UK,
okay,
in all of the Premiership, Premier League things, so Aston Villa,
yeah,
Manchester, Liverpool, all the big names.
Yeah.
And in those 2,000, none are gay, openly.
Yes.
That's statistically not possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the essential question. Why are they not out?
Yeah.
I do want to mention the actual name of this this new diver who is garnering a lot of attention. His name is Aidan Faminoff. And for folks, he does have an Instagram. So AIDANFAMINOFF. Aidan Faminoff. And he is Canadian. He's currently at Florida State Diving. But they believe that he'll go all the way to the Olympics. So he is openly gay. He's 19. So definitely legal. Mm. Aidan Faminoff.
But if he had just said he was 19, that was fine. But following it up by saying he's definitely legal, that makes it creepy. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, I just want to make
I'm just
sure
going to be the voice of the audience. Somewhere out there, somebody heard you say that, and they're like, ugh. So just whoever that is in, Penticton or BC
or St. John's,
or whoever it is out there who heard.
Well, you can't always tell from his
I got your back.
his Instagram posts, because he just looks like a teenage boy, and you're like, I don't know what's going on here, but no, he is 19.
I mean, you could just say he's 19 and then let people do the math.
Yeah. But so he was at Toronto Church Street Pride. Great. Anyway, whatever. My point here is that Canadian out Canadian athletes, we're seeing a lot more of them, which is really nice.
Yes,
very
in
empowering.
Canada, yeah.
And I think maybe we need to
Not in the major leagues. But actually, we are going to do something in October eventually.
Yes. Well, I want to wrap up this conversation around BC. I don't think I even got to it. We will get there eventually. The BC government, the NDP government, wants to bring back a human rights commission.
Right.
So in 2002, the Liberal government switched it out from a commission in favor of a complaints-driven tribunal. Now, the only thing that that the tribunal will investigate is something that somebody has complained about.
Right, yeah.
And that's pretty much the scope. And that's fine. You know, it's not, it's better than nothing.
Well, that's more like a court.
But, you know, in 2015... Like, you know,
the court sits there and they sit in their little room in their little gown with their little wig. Or, I mean, if you're...
But I think the Supreme Court has some proactive powers. Like, they can ask themselves questions. They can ask themselves constitutional questions. I don't know if you knew that.
True, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah,
they were the ones who pushed for gay marriage back in the 2000s. Yeah.
So for our listeners' sake, usually if the government wants to know whether or not something would be constitutionally correct, they ask the Supreme Court. They're like, hypothetically, if we impose martial law for 5 years, is it legal? The answer, obviously, would probably be no. But the Supreme Court can ask itself questions.
Yes.
So, dear self, would this be legal? And then they investigate it and they come up with a decision. So yeah, and then usually the government goes, thanks, weird that you talk to yourself, but okay, thanks for that insight and advice.
Most people talk to themselves in private. I think that's fine.
But they talk to themselves in public. Yeah. Anyway,
I think most people also speak to inanimate objects in private. Like when you pick up a pen and it doesn't work and you're like, pen, you're letting yourself down. Like,
I mean, we've been over this pen. Like, really?
I mean, I lick your tip and you're still not working.
If anyone thought that was creepy, on behalf of our listeners, I would like to apologize. Moving swiftly on, but the BC Human Rights Tribunal in 2015 did react and found that the Vancouver Police Department had discriminated against trans people. And that was brought up by a complaint. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, that decision in 2015 has now been implemented in a policy in the Vancouver Police. It's already in place in Edmonton and Victoria and many other places. They already have this policy in place. Mm-hmm. But Vancouver was dragging its heels on it. Now, they want to set up this tribunal. And I think it's great. And the reason why I think this is much better an option, and if you are in British Columbia and you want to share your feelings on this, they are doing stakeholders and meetings. So parliamentary...
Stakeholder meetings.
Stakeholders.
If you're meetings. Just saying they're having stakeholders, that would be like a plate or like one of those like two-pronged forks for barbecues.
I just thought, I just immediately imagined like lots of people holding steaks.
Yeah.
Anyway, the meeting with stakeholders. So the parliamentary secretary Ravi Kalun will be leading the public consultation. So if you are in British Columbia, please get out and check it out. And if you would like to participate, but here at CanQueer, I think we fall down on the side of yes. This is a good idea.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes, being
correct. Because, let me tell you...
Well, sometimes these things happen because like, you'll have an entire organization who doesn't realize that they have like homophobic or transphobic policies because it's an organization that has like, you know, 10 people total. Mm-hmm. None of them are out. And one day they get a new hire and it's the very first time they've had an openly queer person working in their office. And just in the past 15 years since the Human Rights Commission started including LGBTQ issues in their mandate, it just never occurred to them to update their own policies. And then someone shows up and it's like, oh, you have homophobic policies. And it's just, well, we have 10 people here and we never had a gay one before and we didn't even realize. And so some of it is time delay and some of it you need to actually take the time to actually sit down and be like, okay, this thing that applies to nobody yet. Mm-hmm. Let's get ahead of the curve on this.
So before you jumped in,
you need...
I was literally about to say that one of the big differences is education. That's the difference between a tribunal and a commission.
Okay.
Is that they do that education that you're talking to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just education, but also looking into things that, like as I said, that don't apply yet.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. We don't know anything about being able to get couples benefits for a partner who is trans and needs special medical attention. But special medical attention in this case is usually just hormone injections. And then, you know, like you're 60 and your wife is at that age where she probably should have gone through menopause by now, but she's still taking a young person's hormone levels. And what do you do about that? And, oh, we've never written a policy. Like, you need to get the head of the curve on this sort of thing.
Yeah. So what...
that actually...
BC is the only province without a commission.
Oh.
They only have the tribunal. So, I mean, I think it bring it into line. And the story I was going to tell a little bit earlier was that... When I went to the Senate committee hearings for Bill C-13, an act to amend the Criminal Code and Human Rights Act regarding gender identity and gender expression,
okay.
which passed.
Nicknamed the Trans Rights Bill.
Trans Rights Bill, which now means
I like how all the bills have nicknames. But my favorite one so far is the Zombie Law Bill.
This is true. Yeah. I like the zombie. For our listeners, the Zombie Law Bill is just a bill to kill old laws that still
don't apply
are alive.
Anymore,
yeah. They're like on the books, but they've been struck down in court, so they're like alive, but not alive.
Or they're just archaic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not allowed... One of my favorite ones...
Spitting in public or something?
My favorite zombie law
challenge somebody to a duel. That's on the list.
Something like that, yeah. In Burlington, where I grew up, you're not allowed to drag a dead horse down Brand Street during rush hour, but the courts decided in the 40s that you could drag a dead horse down Brand Street outside of rush hour. And it was just... And it was at one point in time in the... I think it was the late 90s when somebody actually started looking at all the zombie laws in Burlington. They actually found... Anyway, zombie law... Archaic. It's just a law where you're like, what? That's on the books? So, yeah.
Back to my story
about...
It was
a law... It was a bill that's going to be passed at the federal level to wipe out all the dumb laws.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is like a third of them. Because there's a lot of laws on the books that hasn't been applied.
Yeah, I think it's third is an exaggeration, but...
Well, you know, I like to think it's a third because... Because the 1800s happened and weird laws got passed.
This is true.
Yeah. Victorian era. Oof. Oof. Oof.
So the...
Oof. Luke? Oof.
So the at the Senate committee hearings, if I can finish the story, at the Senate committee hearings, the evidence given was given from the Ontario Human Rights Commission.
Right, okay.
And essentially they were saying, you know, this is needed, these protections are needed because, and, you know, because it's not necessarily, you know, you're going to wait until you've been transphobic and then a trans person sues you. That's not what it's there for.
Yeah, no.
What they were saying was, what this means is the commission can go, okay, so this is our new decision. You mm-hmm. decided that this is something that needs protecting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what does that look like in terms of constructive dismissal? You know, how do you avoid this constructive dismissal of a trans person? Well, you know, how do you avoid a poisoned environment for trans folks, you know, and they provide, you know, a guidance, and it's actually a 30-40 page document on how to navigate trans folks and Ontario law, referring to court cases that exist. So really it's like it's in your benefit for the BC when they get it to provide it, so that if you're a business in BC and you're like, for me, trans people, meh. But you don't want to get sued.
Yeah.
You know, and this is really the guidance on how not to get sued. Not to, you know, to be charged.
And all of this overall is not new. In the 80s, they started that with physical disabilities and having physically navigable spaces. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't know if that's how it all... I don't know if that was the birth of the whole thing, but I do know that that's when it started getting into the media as a thing that you're supposed to care about. For what's it called? Not affordances, making accountability? No, the other one where you have you
accessibility.
That's the one. You make your space accessible. And so and now you're just talking about making spaces accessible for trans individuals. So the concept of workplace accessibility is it's not new, and it's just certain things get forgotten that we need to include these issues in there as well. And so they're doing it little by little.
So we're going to play a song before we come back to some more Canadian news. We may get to some international news. Who knows? But the song is Any Other Way by Jackie Shane. Now, Jackie Shane is an American-Canadian, although this was recorded in Canada. So I believe it fits the maple definition of CanCon. Jackie Shane was notably a openly... Well, not openly, but I think it was an open secret. Trans black American Canadian in the 60s. 67 is when this song came out.
Gender nonconforming, because trans was a medical term in the 60s.
Yeah,
Let's not be historical revisionists.
So may well have been drag at the time.
But in modern terms, definitely trans. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Transgender performance pioneers, how she's been described by Exclaim, and is releasing a 2 CD and 2 LP set. It's the first time that anyone's heard anything from her in almost 50 years. Jackie Shane has re-emerged and is re-releasing things. But this is an oldie but a goodie any other way, and we'll be back just after this.
Mm-hmm. you're my friend, but I don't know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Since we've been apart, and when I pass, I hear them whisper, there he goes with a broken heart. But when you see my baby, he is what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. That's all I got to say, my friend. Now we'd better say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And after our heated discussion over the tribunal in BC, who knew that me and you would? I think we're just very excited to talk about it. Now, something I'm not excited to talk about is something that we gave misleading information on.
Oh, when did we do that?
Yeah, so we are referring to, there was a story that has since been clarified. So we want to update our listeners. We didn't give misleading at the time. At the time, what we knew to be correct. However, it has been misleading. So five men, gay men, broadly matching the same description, have gone missing in Toronto between 2010 and now. Mm-hmm. Three between 2010 and 2012. And then two more just within the last 9 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bit of a panic. People thought they may have been a serial killer, although there's obviously, you know, they haven't discovered these gentlemen.
Yeah.
So we don't know for sure. Perhaps they've all moved to Prague.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, it's not a murder until you find the body. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, I was being more delicate, but yeah. No,
that's,
but that's the point. So we said that, and it is Salimason and Andrew Kinsman who are currently missing.
Mm-hmm.
And the police believe that there's no connection between those two.
Right.
So they cannot connect those two.
I'm pretty sure when we reported it a couple months ago, we said there's three and then possibly another two, is I think how we said it.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to just clarify for our listeners who worry that there may be a serial killer in Toronto targeting gay men. Currently, the police cannot prove one way or another that exists. Exercise good caution.
There's still a pattern for the first three, though.
There is,
but absolutely. A pattern, it could just be coincidence. Because again, until there's any physical evidence of any kind, it's just a mystery. And that's the real problem here, is that it's just an unsolved mystery.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Well, the 519, which is the service center in Toronto, played host to a consultation with the
LGBTQ service center.
Yes.
They have more than one service center
this
in Toronto.
True.
This is one of them.
Toronto Police Inspector Peter Cool went and spoke with folks gathered there. You know, and there's about, it's reported by Extra that there were about 150 people showing up. It is a huge concern when you think that they're, you know, perish their thought that men are going missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a community is being targeted.
Yes.
And really they want to kind of convey some calm and, you know, they are largely convinced that foul play is the likely cause.
It's possible, yeah.
But they can't, you know, link them. So they're like, yes, something's happening. They've set up a task force. The Toronto Police Service have a task force looking into it, but they can't. They can't confirm that there's five.
Yeah.
You know, that's essentially what we know now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you're in Toronto, in the Toronto area, we know we have listeners in Guelph and in Kingston,
mm-hmm.
You know, be weary and be careful. You know, if you're going somewhere, let someone know. Avoid one particular dark alley. Just generally dark alleys in Church Street if you can. Just avoid dark alleys.
Part of the problem is that
alleys need better lighting.
Well, because of the housing problem in Toronto, there's a lot of apartments that you have to go down dark alleys to get home.
Mm.
It's weird. Also, actually, this year for New Year's, I went to a really good New Year's party that happened to be down a dark alley. It was a little bit spooky. I didn't even know there was dark alleys in Toronto that had gravel instead of pavement. But yeah, we went to a gravel dark alley to a garage. And in the garage was one of the best disco parties I've ever been to. Unrelated, but yeah. Dark alleys do exist in Toronto. And
so if the Toronto City Council is listening, which you know, we know they do.
I was also with a group of five people. So
this is true.
Yes.
I mean, you've got safety in numbers.
Exactly.
But if the Toronto City Council is listening, how about installing lighting in dark alleys? Just putting it out there. Lights.
Well, okay.
You know. Public service.
I mean, really, that would be a tax credit for people to install lights in their own alleyways.
This is true.
Yeah.
This would, yeah, absolutely. Now, just outside of Toronto, there was another very disturbing story that we've seen. Now, we know that hate crimes are on the rise in the UK.
Yes.
Hate crimes are definitely on the rise in the US. And some initial research from Canada is showing an increase in hate crimes against Muslim people.
Yeah, it's ethno-religious people in general, because there's also a lot of anti-Semitic activity going on in Canada right now.
Mm-hmm. But we've seen now an incident in Pickering, Ontario, which is very concerning.
Yeah.
Now, I actually shared this story to you. Do you have any insights on
it? Oh, no, I've... Yes. It's near where the can-dos are. Not can-do as in have a can-do attitude, but can-do as in the can-do nuclear reactors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I don't know if you knew about that.
I didn't know there was a nuclear reactor there, but there
Yeah, the Pickering series, actually, there's a style of nuclear power plant that's named after the city, because that was the first place they were built. Anyway, a middle-aged elderly, an older couple living in the countryside, had the side of their house vandalized. And the two of them, who have, you know, being a little bit older, have seen much worse times in the world we live in now. At first, they were comfortable shrugging off the idea of somebody having spray-painted a bad word on their garage door until they realized that at the bottom of the graffiti, it said, "You have 30 days."
Yeah.
And it was the ultimatum that made them afraid.
It says, and I quote, "We don't like the F word. Time to move, 30 days."
Mm-hmm.
They just moved to the area. They have a 5-year-old daughter, and that was the really concerning part.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, was this a threat on their lives? You know, and it is serious. It's, you know, maybe you're thinking, oh, it's just a bit of graffiti on the side of the tent. Disgruntled new neighbor, you know, these things happen. It's a neighborly dispute, nothing to worry about. But worse things have happened.
Yeah.
Worse things have happened in Canada. And,
and as I said, like, for a lot of the older generation of LGBTQ people, like, they've seen much worse than what's happening now. But having seen much worse, they know that when someone gives you a 30-day ultimatum, there's probably something not happy at the end of it.
Yeah. You don't want to stick around. Well, they are sticking around. They've had an outpouring of support from the local community, which we're very thankful for. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens next. See what happens 30 days from that incident. We'll be keeping an eye on it,
because the police will be all over it now.
Yeah,
investigators and all that.
Well, there is a bill in Parliament which will introduce mischief as a grounds for hate crime. So, for folks listening, hate crimes It's broadly speaking, it's not a crime in and of itself. So if you murdered somebody, that's murder. If you murdered somebody because they are a woman, then you are a sexist and a murderer, obviously. But because you did it, because they are a identifiable group, and every other woman is now afraid of women murdering men, which is usually a thing anyway. But because it affects the whole group, that is the hate crime. But there has to be a crime. Anyway, all of this is to say...
Well, it has to be attached to another
law. Yeah, there has to be an initial crime.
Yeah.
You know, assault, murder...
Where the hate crime is the motivating factor.
Yeah. So it's like, you killed them and...
Yeah.
Currently, I don't believe that graffiti is on the list, but there is a bill in Parliament
to add it. We should specify what mischief is, because the legal definition of mischief is quite specific. So it's damaging property, rendering property unusable, vandalizing, and there's another one. Removing property without their permission, and then returning it. So if you steal something... No, if you steal something... Like if somebody can't make it to work because you stole their car and then returned it 6 hours later, they have their car now, but because, you know, harm was done to them, that is considered to be, that does fall under mischief. It's really weird, but apparently it happens enough that it lands under mischief. So it's basically just rendering somebody's property damaged, unusable, or temporarily unusable because you've been futzing with it in some way.
Well, graffitiing the side of a garage is certainly...
That
would fall quite firmly under mischief, for sure.
I think egging someone's house or soaping their windows also falls under it, because it does render it, like, if you don't clean that up immediately, it's just going to get worse. Yeah. So I think that also falls under it. But mischief, because it has such a broad range of possible... faces, like, it can be realized in so many different ways. That's also, I think that they have three different levels of mischief, like mischief causing damage under a certain amount of money, and then
over and under 5,000.
Under and over 5,000. I thought there was a third range. It was like under 5,000, over 5,000, and up to blah blah blah, and then above that as well. I can't remember. Anyway, but there are levels, because you know, soaping somebody's window and burning their house down, well, no, that would be something else, actually, but driving through their house, there you go, because you're not lighting it on fire or something, so I mean, that would be something else. But yeah, so mischief will probably have the ability to have a hate crimes motivation attached to it, which is not currently the case. Like, if somebody vandalizes your building, if they graffiti homophobic things on your building, technically there is no crime. There's bylaws that if somebody vandalizes your building and you don't clean it up immediately, you can get fined for that. So it's currently, under the current system, if somebody writes homophobic stuff on your house, you are just as likely to get in trouble as they are.
Well, if you leave it there.
Now, as it happens, from what I understand, both the lower and upper house are 100% on board. It's bipartisan. Everyone agrees. You have a few people abstaining because they're like, I don't know how much I care, but no one's against it. So it's almost definitely going to go through, but it's just one of those things where it has to go through the process. Mm-hmm. So I think they said early winter, early new year, like January.
Yeah, once they go back to sit in the house. Yeah.
So it's almost definitely going to pass. But the problem is that right now, in August 2017, mischief and vandalizing, because somebody is LGBTQ+, is not yet.
I think it's just crime. It's the graffitiing.
You can't throw a hate crime on top of that.
Well, I get the impression that the Pickering police did. So clearly the crime they're attributing is the Durham Regional Police that are looking into it. And of course the Joneses, which are the ones who were effective. Mm-hmm. Brett Dalford Jones and I believe it was a Paul Jones that were the two. Yeah, Paul Jones.
That name is almost as bad as Luke Smith.
I know, it's very generic. But they've been married 13 years, they've moved to the area recently, and what a welcome, eh? Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not rolling out the Canadian welcome mat, really, is it?
Well, I think that is not very welcoming, but the fact that the entire community came around, like, that would be very welcoming, knowing that when bad things happen, people got your back. I think that's ultimately... It's not that bad. Have you ever heard of Life According to Garp?
No.
It was a Robin Williams movie from the early 90s, I believe. It had Meryl Streep in it, so you know it's good as well. And in the movie, they were at one point in time, he was house hunting with his wife, and as they were looking at a house, an airplane flew into it, and he just instantly said, "We'll take it." And then the real estate agent said, "How could you possibly? There's an airplane in the side of your house." It was a one propeller thing, and the pilot just walked out, and they're like, "You okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm fine, but my plane's all jacked up." Anyway, he said, "What are the chances of this happening twice?"
Hmm.
"Our house is now plane proof." And so, to me, this is relevant because now that couple knows that their house is essentially graffiti proof. That, like,
because everyone will be watching.
Yeah, everybody will be watching. Yeah,
like, absolutely. Now,
also, I just recommend that movie. It was a good movie.
It was a good movie. I heard somebody last night, and I nearly fell off my chair when they said they had not heard of The Birdcage.
Oh, okay.
The movie The Birdcage.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
Casual Fall was a bit better, though.
Casual Fall, absolutely. It's a remake of The Casual Fall.
Yeah.
It was a 1996 movie with Robin Williams.
Robin Williams one was the 1996 one.
Yes.
The French one was 88, I think.
Yeah. And Nathan Lane. I mean, it also had Gene Hackman in it as well. So, I mean, it's a great movie. I thought it was hilarious. It was very... It's very much of the time. Is it set in... Not Miami, like Key Springs, Salt Springs. Somewhere in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly quite an entertaining movie. But they hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually... I'll tell you after who it was.
Well, I haven't seen it. But I have seen Le Casual Fall.
Okay, well, that's acceptable. So I want to talk a little
bit... I'm going to watch something or the remake. I'm probably going to watch the original.
That's fair.
Yeah.
So I want to talk very briefly about some international news before we run out of time. And this may be of interest to our New Zealand listeners.
Ooh.
Australia got into trouble.
Because of that kid whose legs got eaten off by water fleas.
I did not know that story.
Yeah, no, Australia's trying to kill you. You know that, right?
Well, no, we know that.
Don't drink the water. Don't go outside. Don't touch any plants. Don't put your feet in the water. Don't touch the sand. Don't touch the bark. Don't touch anything. Even the koalas are trying to kill you.
Brought to you by Australia Tourism. No.
They know. They know. They know.
Absolutely.
I don't even think they're offended.
Country is a Bush Tucker trial.
Yeah. They're probably just like, yeah, that's about right.
Anyway, Australia got into trouble by the UN. The UN Human Rights Committee recently ruled that by recognizing same-sex marriage is fine, applaudable, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is not allowing same-sex divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently locking people into relationship is considered a breach of their rights.
Yes.
Who knew?
Right.
That was a thing. And you wouldn't guess where they're from.
Canada.
Of course, yes. They're from Canada. There's apparently a Canadian connection and everything.
Yeah.
It is Australian...
Canada was the second country, I believe, to have legal same-sex marriage. And it was only by a matter of weeks as well. Like, the Netherlands beat us to the Netherlands? Yeah, it was the Netherlands beat us to the punch by, like, weeks. But Canada was the first to realize that we forgot to put gay divorce in there as well. And it was 2 years after the first same-sex marriage where they're like, "So, divorce, how's that coming along?" And they're like, "Doesn't exist yet. You're going to have to wait for 2 years." And it was, yeah, you'd think that they'd learn.
It'd be simultaneous, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can solemnly swear to enter a relationship, and when things don't go quite so well, to leave that relationship.
From what I hear, there are a few Scandinavian countries. Now, there's four Scandinavian countries in total, so you have a 1 in 4 chance of picking. Although some people lump Finland in as well, but...
I always thought Finland was Scandinavian.
Well, they're not Scandinavian, but they're always welcome to the party.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So, yeah, there's a couple of them. I think it's Denmark and Sweden are thinking about introducing a thing where when you get your marriage license, it is for 7 years. At the end of 7 years, you are no longer married. It lapses on its own, and it's seen as sort of a natural escape hatch, so that you have to renew your marriage. If you're married for 50 years, then that's because you renewed it willingly. Seven times you renewed it. You know, so 7 times 7 is 49.
Germany.
Yeah, Germany is thinking about doing that.
Joschka Fischer is the German politician who has suggested a 7-year limit. That was in 2007.
Oh.
I found an old article. I am sorry. I was trying to find which country it was, if it was Finland or Sweden or Denmark.
It's Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Iceland. Even though they're an island way over there, they are part of Scandinavia.
This is true.
Yeah. But Finland is, because they're Finnish, they're not even European. They don't speak a European language and they have a different genetic stock.
It was also proposed in China, a 7-year limit.
Really? Apparently
7-year limits are quite popular as an idea. Anyway, back to the point though, that, you know, the more you know.
China's really weird because every so often you do stuff and you're like,
they haven't, it's China. Not, I think it was proposed in China.
No, but still, like China, every so often they do things that are so incredibly liberal. You're like, China? And then other times they do things and you're like, oh, China. It's, they're a... Yeah. Interesting, very interesting. Yeah.
Now, I hate to end the show on a Debbie Downer, but we have to. It is incumbent on us to recognize this story. Now, we have a copy, and we will be linking on our website, www.cancorea.news, the report by the Russian LGBT Network titled, They Said I'm Not Human, That I Am Nothing, That I Should... rather be a terrorist than a F-word, LGBT persecution in the North Caucasus. You know, this is a dire situation. The journalist that broke the story is facing deportation to Uzbekistan, where he will essentially be killed. He is an openly gay individual, and his chances of survival is pretty next to none. Mm. Lithuania apparently let leak that Canada will be accepting Chechenian refugees, because of course of the third party agreement, Russia, in Chechnya, there are Chechens moving from Chechnya to other bits of Russia. Mm-hmm. But what you have to do to get refugee status is go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And if you go somewhere in Europe, then that's automatically a safe space and they won't take you from there. So it's very difficult to get out of Chechnya because of the situation with Russia. Unless you went like the other way into like one of the stands, and then you could probably get whatever. Point being, difficult to get out.
Azerbaijan is weirdly progressive. For that corner of the world, it's quite progressive.
So
relative to its neighbors.
Lithuania and a couple of other countries are now taking in refugees from Chechnya. They tweaked their rules. And they let slip that Canada's looking into it. Mm-hmm. We have not been able to confirm. We will be reaching out to Randy Boissonneau and Citizenship and Immigration to confirm whether or not we will be allowing Chechen refugee claims. That being said, this 33-page report is harrowing.
Mm-hmm.
It is harrowing, and it reads like somebody was visiting Nazi Germany.
Guantanamo Bay.
Well, both of the above. Or, you know, they went to a gulag. They have accused the spokesperson for the parliament of the Chechen Republic, Magomed Daduv, and Ayub Katiev, the minister of internal affairs in Argun, and the head of the special division of first responders, as being personally there. I'm going to read you a quick excerpt, just the one. This has been clipped into Out's coverage of it. One day, all my relatives were informed about the fact that I was detained. The Lord, which is who they call the parliamentary spokesperson, came to us, the chairman of the parliament, Mahmoud Daduv. We were all set down before the Lord. The Lord approached us, took pictures on his phone, and asked each of us if us was gay. We had to answer yes. This all happened in front of our relatives. He talked to our relatives, saying that we brought disgrace to the nation and to the families, and told them that if they honor the traditions, they must kill us, and that if they did everything, they would not be punished for it. You have one of the most powerful men in Chechnya telling family members to kill their sons.
Yeah.
You know, it is, I can't even begin to wrap my head around it. And I think maybe Canada needs to do more. Like, this is truly deplorable. And Russia's turning a blind eye.
Well, the worst part is, maybe not this in specific, but the situation in the Northern Caucasus sort of started maybe about 30 years ago. Because there was a Chechenian uprising in the 90s as well. And then there was a Russian insurgence into Chechnya. That's part of where Putin got his reputation as a military leader, was actually by leading the military into Chechnya. And so it's one of those things where it's a situation that's been boiling away in the background for quite some time, that this could have been prevented if the UN or even the EU, because being a Caucasian state, it's not really in the EU because the Caucasus are just outside the EU zone.
They're really the Russian. I mean,
yeah, they are. Well,
they're Russian Federation.
So Armenia and Albania also overlap with the Caucasus, yeah. But they are in Europe because they're on the western edge. But anyway, they are essentially Russian. But it is, there's a lot of situations mm-hmm. like this that have been boiling away for a long time, and it's only now are we starting to care about it, even though this probably could have been prevented if people
absolutely
looked into it back in the 90s when they were bombing primary schools.
But there's something you can do now, and if you're listening and you feel impassioned by this, you know, these are men who are being ransomed for $17,000. You know, these are men who are being declared terrorists so that they can't be saved. Mm-hmm. That's the state exerting so much insane power and control. The LGBT network, the Russian LGBT network, has already been able to move 64 gay men mm-hmm. out of Chechnya, which is an incredible number. But you have to bear in mind that each gay man they capture is tortured, beaten and abused until they give up the names of anybody else. So they could be gay, they could not be gay.
Yeah.
They could just be the sad sod that one guy knew. That was tortured to give up the name. Mm. If you think that Canada should do more, please contact your MP or message Randy Boissonneau, MP of Edmonton, the LGBT special advisor, and hopefully we can see some movement on it. And I hate to end on such a sad note, but unfortunately that is all we have time for. We will be playing out with Kim Petras, who was produced by Dr. Luke, so I'm a bit about that. Mm-hmm. But the openly trans star was the first person to undergo sex affirmation surgery, the youngest person, so the world's youngest person ever to be to have the surgery, has been taking hormonal therapy since 12. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, to listen, you can't tell.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it made a huge impact.
Yes.
So this is I Don't Want It All by Kim Petras, and that's all for me.
Thank you for listening. Also, thank you to Bradley.
Yes, Bradley of Queers, Questions, and Cocktails.
Yes.
Great podcast. Check it out on iTunes and
commented
Android.
Commented on a recent episode. And I like to keep up this tradition of when an audience member interacts with us, I think we should thank you personally.
We will. And we'd like to personally thank Bradley. And if you listen to us, reach out to us at Talk Can Queer.
Yeah.
That's all for now.
See you later.
Baby, maybe you could be the one. We can kick it, we can have some fun. Oh yeah, oh yeah.